Hi, I'm Brandon Webb, former Navy SEAL and New York Times bestselling author. If you're like me, you want real security and defense news you can trust. You're probably tired of hearing the same talking heads, guys who have never seen the front lines, saying the same BS 100 different ways. It's why I founded SoftRep.com, military-grade news produced entirely by our staff of military veteran journalists. Sign up at SoftRep for real news, real experience, real experts. SoftRep does what the mainstream media can't, deliver authentic content straight from the front lines. Sign up for a free trial membership today, and I'll give you my best-selling ebook, The Red Circle, for free. But that's not all. Your SoftRep membership also includes access to cutting-edge defense and security news by military experts, access to our award-winning documentaries, ebooks, special member events, and much more. So what are you waiting for? Let us know you're in. Sign up for your free trial membership today. Join our community at SoftRep. That's SoftRep.com.
Brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to SoftRep Radio. Special operations military news and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Everybody, welcome back to SoftRep Radio. This week, I have a special guest again in studio, Kamal Ravikant, who's a close friend of mine. Also meditated with the monks in the Himalayas. Many, by looking at him, would never know, but he is a former Army, U.S. Army infantry veteran. Walked the 500 plus miles across the Camino Santiago, right?
Yeah, in Spain. Yeah, it's an 11th century pilgrim route.
Among many other things, founder of companies and venture capitalist, now best-selling author. And we're here to talk about your new book, which essentially is a new version of Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It, which I think, you know, I read both versions. I really think there's a lot more value added to the second time around. And then I'm personally, you know, I found myself, we'll get into it in the discussion, but I was like, I knew what you were talking about, right?
Like, yeah.
It was personal for me. But I read the book. I think I jammed it in one day on my day off. But great book, which, you know, you and I were getting coffee before the show. It's a number one new release on Amazon in the post-traumatic stress category, which I think is interesting for us to get in that conversation just because of so much that's happened in the U.S. armed forces with just the kind of never-ending deployment cycle. And I feel like this book could help a lot of people coming out of the military. I mean, you and I both know that coming out of the military back to civilian life is a difficult integration. But, you know, add on top of that, you know, being in this like horrendous environments and seeing like the worst in people, right? Like the worst people can get and in that kind of nasty wartime environment. I mean, it just adds to the stress of transition, I think. So I'd love to talk about that. But welcome to the show, dude. Welcome back.
Thanks, man. It's fun to be here. In fact, last time we were here, I was interviewing you.
Yeah.
Remember that? We were trying that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
We still got some work on that to go, I think, too. Look, I know you well. I know the whole story well. But what inspired the Love Yourself book? I mean, you know, those listeners that may not understand like the issues and events that led up to your writing the book. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's actually interesting. You know, like I saw this thing on Instagram the other day. This guy posted, he's in the Army, and he posted like, I'm reading this book about self-love. And he said, I never would have picked it up. But now I saw that the author was a former 11 Bravo. So that makes me trust him, you know, which I thought was really interesting. And I do get a lot of that from male readers. You know, I'm not, I have long hair, but I'm not a ponytail guy banging drums. You know, I'm a guy, you know, look, I've been in the military. I've climbed mountains. I've built companies, you know, I've built, you know, I'm a doer.
Yeah.
Right. So I come from that background. So I'm a very, very big believer in results. Only results matter. Right. And effective results. And honestly, I'm quite lazy. So I want like the best results in the fastest way possible. And that stick. So Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends On is ultimately is a book on mindset. It's a book, very practical book on mindset, on what I've done to actually a couple of times really change my life from starting from the inside. And the first time that happened was, it was in 2011. So I've been building companies and, you know, after the Army, I moved out to Silicon Valley and I started building startups and that became my thing. And I did quite well at it. My last company that I built, I self-funded it completely, you know, for 3.5 years. You know the kind of work that takes, right? And I ran out of money. Self-funding a company, a tech company for years is not cheap. And I ran out of money. And so I was doing really well. I raised money from some high-profile people. And I was like this, you know, like I was walking pretty tall. I was like, you know, I was maybe 6 months away from a big exit where it was like you get your FU money, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking pretty highly of myself. And then the whole thing blew up, just completely blew up. I lost everything. I was making payroll off credit cards. I was living off credit cards. My relationships fell apart. I fell apart. I got really sick. Like the whole thing, it was just like one downward slope. And there was one night I was just so miserable. And I remember I was like, okay, I can't stay in this place. I'm going to get out of this. I'm going to just die trying. I cannot stay in this place, in this just pure misery. And the misery was in my mind, you know. I mean, look, there were no tanks outside my windows. There were no bombs dropping on me, you know. So like, I was in the U.S. I was in San Francisco, you know, like we live very charmed lives here. But you, when you're in darkness, you don't think of that, those things. You're in darkness. So I staggered over to my journal on my desk and I wrote a vow to myself. And I'm a big believer in the power of commitment to yourself. If you make commitment to yourself, it's a sacred act. It's something between you and life itself or whatever you believe itself. What came out surprised me. I thought it was going to be like a vow, like I'm going to get out of this or I'm going to do this. What came out was a vow to love myself, which I remember writing it, sitting back thinking, what the hell did I just do? And then I had to like, well, I made a vow. I made a commitment to myself. I got to keep it. I got to figure it out. So I didn't go online to figure it out. I didn't buy books. I'm going to have a book on it now. You know, I didn't buy books on it. I didn't buy that whole thing because everyone gives us stuff platitudes, you know, versus what is practical. I needed to get out of that misery. So I just started working on my inside, on my head. I started doing things like running patterns of like thought and feeling and emotion and feeling of light, feeling light coming. And I started doing these things because I also have a degree in economics, which didn't help me with this, but a degree in biology. And I've studied some neuroscience and I know how the brain works. I started utilizing some of those concepts. And then I noticed that certain things made me start to feel better. That just by doing them, I felt better. So if they worked, I went deeper. If it didn't, and if it stopped working, I threw it away. I really didn't care. It was just my life that mattered, my inside that mattered. And after, I'd say about a week or two, I'd basically come up with a practice that I was doing regularly every day. And this wasn't something that was taking much time or I had to sit down and journal and do yoga and stretch or any of that stuff. It was just like an internal stuff. Our thoughts are running throughout the head every day anyway, that I was just more like channeling and focusing my thoughts and feelings. And I got better really fast. And it really changed things for me. And so the original book that I wrote was a little tiny book that I self-published on Amazon just to share what I did. And, you know, I thought I was going to be a big laughing stock in Silicon Valley. It was like, hey, look, I failed and, you know, now I love myself. Yay. You know, like, look at me. And instead, what happened was that book took off. It became genuinely an Amazon success story. I started getting emails, you know, and I did something. I never expected the book to do anything. I just was doing it to share so I could buy copies for friends or share with them what I did rather than have to repeat again and again. So I put my email address in the book. And you know what? I started getting emails and emails and emails. I have like thousands, not tens of thousands of emails from readers.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously Twitter and Instagram messages and on Facebook and all that, just sharing me like this book has literally saved lives. I met people who like, look, I had a gun next to me and for some reason I had your book and I was reading and I put the gun away. You know, I kind of know.
Yeah, it's heavy.
You know, and I've actually been close to that place myself and I've used that practice to save myself. It was amazing, right? The book took off. And so I put the book out in 2012. And So now it's 2020. Between 2012 and 2020, I'm getting all these emails. I always respond to my emails, sometimes late. You know, I have things to do, but I always respond. I started to notice there were also questions. I started to notice a pattern in the questions. Like, I was like, yeah, you know what? I held so much back. Like, there's so much more I need to share that makes this more viable, that makes this more practical, that makes this actually make something that people can do when it lasts, not just something that you do for a month or a few weeks and feel better and move on. And before you know it, a few months later, you're back in the same place again. And also, I'm someone who's always working on myself. You know, that's just something. Maybe being joined the Army at 18, you know, maybe that person like always like challenging myself, you know, and so I'm always like challenging even this, like how can I be better at this? So over the years, I've developed more and more what I do there. So I was like, okay, it's time to actually write the full book and not hold back this time. You know, it went down to like, look, I have readers write to me about abuse and stuff like that, and they're dealing with it. And everyone, you know, we get caught up in our, well, my situation is different. So, you know, what about this? And I even share my own childhood stuff that, you know, I don't necessarily need the world to know, but I share it because this is how I overcome it using this practice, using this, you know, and it's all very simple. It's very, very simple. It's very doable. And it's an internal thing. And look, and the inside, we're all the same. In the inside, you know, the details may differ on the outside, but the inside, you know, same emotions, you know, same basic emotions are running the show. So I spent a year working on the expanded version. It was like, okay, now I owe it to these readers to actually put out the full thing that I can just say, okay, now it's done. Now you have the whole thing, soup to nuts. Here you go. That's what just came out last week. And what's really interesting is already I'm starting to get those emails, you know, from people. And what's really interesting is on Amazon, it just ranks stuff based on how people get to a book or how they're searching for a book. And it's become the number one book in new release in PTSD, which is so interesting. And it makes sense because PTSD is an internal thing. It's a mental emotional thing, you know, because of circumstances that we went through. And this is a mental emotional practice on making yourself better from the inside out. So it's really, really interesting to see that.
Yeah, I think about it often because I reflect back on my reasons for getting out of the SEAL teams, you know, and kind of mid-career. But I really, I'm grateful I did it, but I remember thinking ahead, like, what would my life be like if I do 20, 25 years? And it was not, like, when I did this thought experiment, I'm like, it's not a good result. Like, I probably wouldn't have a relationship with my kids. My body would be even more broken down than it was now. And I saw this like never ending deployment schedule. And I think about it, like the time I went to Afghanistan after 9/11, I felt like today even I can rationalize that, like what we did over there.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah. And I think about it in the same terms, because I look at the World War II veterans that came home, like we were fighting, like Hitler was an evil guy, right?
Good purpose.
Like we had it, yeah. So there was this purpose. The thing I think that people struggle with is that outside of the first year or two in Afghanistan and a very short period in Iraq, like there was no purpose behind the war, right? Like people were genuinely in 2010 going, what the fuck are we doing in Afghanistan? Like, why am I here and why are my friends dying? Because there's no purpose. And then the same thing was happening, version of that was happening in Iraq. And I think when these people, when you come back and you can't anchor yourself into that purpose, it really causes people a lot of problems. And that's why, you know, we have such high suicide rate now in the military. And when you're out as well, there's the support system is not, it's not as good as it should be. You know, the VA is terrible. They're throwing opiates at these veterans, which is like the worst thing. You know, they should be issuing everybody a copy of your book and telling them to be, you know, work on themselves and mindfulness. And I think now more than ever, you know, if somebody, like if you're listening to this and you know somebody that's transitioning from active duty to civilian life, like this would be a great gift for them, because I think this book would help people kind of maybe choose themselves, right? Is that to give them that new purpose? Because I think a lot of people are lost doing all this crazy, horrendous stuff that happens in war, and they don't have, in the context of World War II, this kind of purpose of, hey, this Hitler is like this evil guy, and he's like, because the veterans that I've noticed, you know, just looking back in time from World War II, like those guys transitioned really well, and they went on to like build and run like major companies in America. And now, you know, I have a hard time finding good guys to even, you know, we have 100% content on SoftRep is all veterans, but we had to work really, really hard to make sure we screen and not, you know, have this like drama PTSD fueled environment, because we were just, you know, it was a lesson that I learned early, because I wanted to just hire these guys and give them a job, but I didn't realize like a lot of these guys have serious issues. One of them was a guy you met and knew, and he basically killed himself earlier this year. So, you know, it's a little bit of a rant there, but I think the book can really do a lot of help. And for those of you that are listening that do have friends and loved ones in the military that are transitioning, they're always asking like, what can I do? Well, buy the book and give it to somebody you care about. That's what you can do, because I feel like this book can help a lot of people, especially coming out of the service. And we need more stuff like this rather than government contracted psychologists handing out, you know, Prozac like fucking Tic Tacs at the VA.
Thanks, man. It's really gratifying to see when I get emails from people in the military or veterans, you know, like reading the book, because I never set out to write a self-help book. You know, I'm not a self-help guy. I'm more of, like I said, I'm more of a practical doer, builder guy, right? But I think that's why this book does so well and connects us, because it's sharing from like, look, this is what I figured out. This is what works for me. And this is a step-by-step and here, and even watch how I fail, you know, and I really want to share, because we are human beings, you know, often, you know, when we look outside, everyone seems to be like killing it, doing great, whatever. And it's important to know, like, look, we all struggle. No matter where we are in life, look, man, in Silicon Valley, I'm surrounded by people who are extremely wealthy, who got extremely wealthy very young. You know, a lot of it's luck, you know, or people who are looked up to in our business culture, you know, where we almost like these days, we almost like worship, you know, people who have a lot of money, and you get to know them, and they're all shit shows inside.
Yeah.
Everyone's a shit show inside. That's the secret to humanity. Everyone's a shit show inside.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you manage your own shit show? That's the secret.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. You know, I'm in YPO and we meet in a confidential environment once a month, and you learn real quick, like, you know, some of the most successful people, like, they just have the same problems, right? They have issues with the in-laws, the family dynamics, you know, and you realize you're just not alone. And like, everybody has this shit. Everybody has the struggle. And it's just like being able to struggle well, I think, is kind of the secret, right?
Yeah. And also, like, the thing is, I've really come to believe that internal work is probably the most important work we can do for ourselves. We all know how to get in shape. We all, you know, a lot of us work hard on our bodies. You know, we know what to eat. We know, you know, what to do for PT. We know what to, like, what workouts to do, right? But the most important thing that runs the whole show, which is the inside, how much of that do we actually spend time working on? And that's the one that runs the entire show, you know, and that's what we forget. And look, it's like, it's no one's fault. We never taught this stuff. We're given platitudes. Even platitudes like, yeah, you know, do this, do that, you know, go have self-esteem, go have confidence, go love yourself. Great. How?
Yeah.
You know, tell me how. That's what matters.
Yeah. You know? And I think too that, you know, people are desperate for the recipe, right? And you're sharing your experience and being vulnerable in a way where people can take the bits and pieces and use them for, you know, what works for themselves. But I think a mistake that I see a lot of people make is, we were talking about this a couple months ago, it's like, get up at 4:30 in the morning and crush the day. You know, it's like, look, that may work for some people, but you know what I mean? Everybody has their thing.
I like sleeping in, man.
Yeah, no, I do too. And if I'm getting up at 4:30, I'm going to bed by probably 8 p.m. Mm. So figuring out like what works for you is kind of like, in my experience, the best thing. Like I wouldn't look at a guy like Bill Gates or Warren Buffett and go like, I'm just not them, right? I'm not like, I can't just mimic what they do throughout their day and be successful. And I see a lot of that, especially on social media. It's like, oh, I'm going to be more mindful. I'm going to get up in the morning. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to do all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, some of that stuff may be valuable, but you have to, like, we're so unique individually, we have to constantly be on that self-exploration path and then take the bits that work for us and constantly.
Yeah, you know, it's fundamentally about making ourselves better.
Yeah.
You know, it's about growth. And that's the only choice we got. We either grow or we stagnate.
Yeah.
You know, and if you grow on the inside, it is the irony. It changes everything on the outside. I keep learning this again and again. I'm like the test case who forgets this and then has to do it again and again.
We're all human, man. Every year I kind of have a personal retreat for a couple of days and I spend time on my business goals and my family and personal goals. And I just finished that Ray Dalio's Principles book, and it caused me to notice, like, what habits do I have that I really aren't serving me well? And I was like, I'm spending way too much time on dating apps. Like, I mean, that's the honest truth, right? And I'm like, I could be so more productive. And and this is a habit I have to break, that I made a commitment to myself to break. And now I'm like, I shifted that energy and time to searching for a commercial real estate property, investment property, and like analyzing businesses. And probably in the last 3 weeks, I've looked at least 1,000 businesses on, you know, this business broker website for sale. And it's like analyzing all these different businesses. Cause, you know, I'm trying to potentially buy a business this year to add on to Sofra, but I'm like, wow, this is way more productive and way more aligned to kind of what I want to do out of life.
Yeah, we got to be conscious, you know. Yeah. It's otherwise we just running. We got this monkey inside the head running the show, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, my monkey was taking over.
Yeah,
well, my monkey was going crazy.
Well, those dating apps are very, you know, designed very well.
Oh, they just trigger you, right? Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you this question: like, what are some of your takeaways from your military experience? And you did 2 years in the Army, three
ended
years,
being three total, yeah, in the 10th Mountain, and I'm doing part of it in the reserves. You know, the main thing was, look, I went in as an 18-year-old, you know, as this. I had a free ride to college. I went to college for a year, and I was like, man, I want to go serve. So I actually dropped out and enlisted, right? I remember here I am, an 18-year-old city kid who's never really spent time in the woods, you know, landing in Atlanta, getting put on a bus and taken to Fort Benning at night, right? And
what time of year was it?
It was beginning of summer.
Oh, it's
summer
humid.
Full bedding is brutal, the worst dude. Time, yeah. Man. It's the yeah. worst time. But look, boot camp's not designed to be comfortable. <You know? laughs> So I did my basic and AIT there straight through. To go there and, you know, be thrown in with all these kids from all over, and we were all so different, man. We were so freaking different. You know, like, if it wasn't the military, we turned to Lord of the Flies, we probably would have, like, some of us would have killed each other. You know, like, it's not like you like everyone in boot camp, you know, like, but you come together, right? You end up coming together and becoming a unit. And the growth that happened, because, you know, you get challenged every day. I was challenged every single day of boot camp. There was not one day I thought, this is a pleasant day.
Yeah.
This is a good day. You know, like, there's never a day you think, oh, this is a great day. You know, like, this, you're just being challenged. Just when you think you got it, they will find some other way to make you miserable. That's the whole point. But I remember at the end of AIT, you know, I did the straight through. So I think it was 13 and a half weeks.
And what's the AIT stand for?
It's basically your MOS, your specialty. So okay. It was infantry school,
okay,
you know. So mine was like basic and infantry school just combined. I think basic was like 8 weeks and infantry was five. It ended up being combined total of 13 and a half, around that, right? And I remember at the end, with the last exercise we did, we had this last ruck march, this long ruck march at night, where that was it, we were done, and then we were going to graduate. And I remember when we finished our ruck march, and I had severe stress fractures, man. They were like thinking about like making me repeat, stay and repeat. I was like, there's no way you're going to make me go through this again. I had these horse pills, these Motrin horse pills. Right?
Oh, 800,
I was,
buddy.
You know, everyone who's been in the military knows this.
Vitamin,
I was popping them like
M, they call it.
It's probably those like candy, man. I was like, I don't give a break my feet in that march. I am not, I'm going to get to the end because you had to make it to the end and you're not sending me back to repeat this thing, you know, which is like the worst insult too they can do is make you go and repeat because you had an injury. I remember we got to the end, we got to a barracks, and then we were standing in formation and a drill sergeant came by and he pinned our blue cord, you know, which is the infantryman's blue cord on our uniforms. And I remember just the pride I felt. I had earned it.
Yeah.
I had earned this. I mean, you probably know this way better than I do, when you earned your trident. But that feeling, as in, I turned 19 boot camps, and now I'm a 19-year-old. I had earned something that was purely mine for the first time in my life, by purely by my sweat, by my stepping up again and again every day and putting up with whatever I was pushed against. And that feeling made me realize I can do anything. I can step up and do anything. I can get through anything. I can do anything. And that mindset's been great for me all my life. You know, it's funny enough, I was thinking the more, beginning of the show, when you were talking about how I walked across Spain and and climbed the Himalayas and stuff, I was like, yeah, of course, I was a leg. Yeah. No wonder half my life I've spent walking across countries and stuff. I was just trained, you know, at a formative age to just walk, you know, walk with a backpack, you know, with a rucksack. But that, at that point, because I look at boot camp as a very special time, because you go in one way, you come out another way, you know, very, very different, right? So for me, it was that end, like, I earned this, and the pride. It's very rarely I felt that kind of pride again in my life with other things I've done.
Yeah. No, I mean, I look back on my Navy career. I think the first time I mean, obviously, you know, graduating boot camp was an accomplishment. Then kind of the next thing for me would, I finished search and rescue swimmer school, and that was a big accomplishment. You know, Eric, I went to Pensacola, Florida after boot camp in Orlando, and finished, you know, air crew candidate school, which was, it wasn't that hard. But rescue swimmer school is hard.
Yeah.
And finishing that, I'm like, okay, great. And then I went to my A school was anti-submarine warfare operator. So it was like studying all these, you know, harmonic frequencies of submarines and learning how to like measure, you know, the harmonic vibrations in water using it to identify like how many blades were on a sub, how many cylinders and frequencies of turbines, and then you could match it to like a specific Soviet sub profile. It was pretty crazy. But then I finished that school and I went from E2 to E4. So I became an NCO, and that was like another big moment. Obviously I got my aircrew wings too. And then the Trident was probably the biggest thing for me. But you like, it's one of those things, I think as a parent, you know, I really am always trying to make sure that I'm putting my kids in situations where they have the ability to kind of earn it, because when you give it to them, it's just not, you know, it's just not the same, right? And that's why I feel so terrible recently with this whole college admissions things. I mean, you could even see how some of these kids were behaving and publicly after they were, you know, the parents were like bribing their kids into these schools. It just takes away the accomplishment of it all. And then you're robbing your kids of something meaningful. They have to struggle. And that's the hardest thing as a parent. Like you don't want your kids to struggle, but when you really realize it, they have to struggle. They have to fail and struggle and earn it. Because if they don't, they're never going to know the value of that. And I think that's something the military taught me, right? Like the value of like you said, having really, really known that you earned this.
You earned it. Yeah. That the military is great for that. I still recommend it to people. You know?
I tried to talk Hunter into going to the Air Force Academy.
That would have been awesome.
I was like, because he's, you know, he's a sharp kid, but he's like, I don't want people telling me what to do. But he's great. He just won his tournament last weekend. He won first place for a parliamentary debate. So really proud of him. You know, you get to see the look on his face, the kid's holding this trophy that he's worked hard for. Like he has put in a lot of hours, that him and his sister, but he has been doing debates since middle school. He spent the first, I think, 2 years of high school debating, and it was always like finishing. I think the highest he finished was third place. And I was like, buddy, it's got to keep working at it. It'll come. And then he started doing better. And then when he first won his tournament, I could just see the like pride on his face, because he'd spent years working towards this moment, and actually to hold this trophy in his hand is it was great. It was a great feeling for me, and I'm sure for him too. You know, as like I said, as a parent, you want your kids to have those kind of moments, you know, and earn them, not just buy it for them, right? Because you're not setting them up for success by giving it to your kids. And that's life in general too, I think. You know, I see, and I don't think it's easy to blame the millennials or Gen Z. I think it exists in every generation where you see people that come up and they're kind of coddled too much. You know, I bump into them in New York all the time. It's like they just have no sense of reality, of earning something. They're just, you know, playing around with their parents' money still as, you know, as a 30-something, you know what I mean?
You know, it's actually interesting. I mean, look, I don't pay much attention to politics because I think it's a confederacy of dunces, you know, it's just a complete, yeah, like, shit. You know, it's just like a confederacy of dunces, you know,
it reminds me of the head or nuts, like, the saying we have in the military is like, what do you mean head or nuts? Like, I'm going to kick you in the balls or I'm going to punch you in the face. We'll take your pick. You're like, there is no good pick. Yeah, that's like what I feel like in politics.
And when I was listening to this, I came across this thing about like, look, college tuition, basically just waving off the debt. Look, it's a huge problem we have. Like, we're basically have indentured servitude. But like, you know, there's another option. Join the military. There's the GI Bill. That was the whole point. You know, like I got the GI Bill, you know, like there are options rather than just waive it. I think if you create something like that, people are losing something. Either waive it or like waive it, join the military or do some sort of like a America Corps program where you go in underserved communities and you work there and you pay and you get paid off.
I've read a few biographies now, and the last one was the founder of SiriusXM, but there's also like, fucking go on a walkabout for a year, like earn your way, wait tables, do odd jobs and explore the world for a year and see how good we really do have it in America. Like I've seen, like that's almost like another version of what you're saying as well, but I think that's extremely valuable rather than go right into college, you know, drinking beer on the weekend, joining a fraternity. Like, come on. Like, it's, and I mean, you and I talk about this often. It's like the college education isn't what it used to be. Like, the kids watching Hunter and how he's developed an interest in computer science. Like, he's fortunate enough to have a computer science class at his high school. But when he was a sophomore, his teacher is like, Hunter, teach the class because you're way more, you know, Python and doing neural network programming. Like, I don't know how to do this stuff, so you teach it. And he just learned it on YouTube and Khan Academy and just self-taught. And it's the same, like, technology is evolving so fast. Like, where are you going to learn? Like, where are you going to legitimately go to school and be like a cutting edge computer science program? I mean, there's just not,
you know, especially that's something I tell people getting out of the military to like trying what to do. I'm like, look, in my career, the best opportunities are actually in knowledge work, you know, where you can make stupid amounts of money, you know, very quickly without an intense amount of training because there's so much demand, right? So like, and how do you go about doing it? You got to be self-motivated, right? So that's one thing it does take. And just like your kid did, right? Be self-motivated and go on all the educations out there now. You don't need to go to college for this. Some of the best programmers in the world have had work for me. I've had some of the very best work for me, man. And they were all self-taught.
Yeah.
Like one of them didn't even finish high school. And this kid, man, he could hack into any Pentagon computer you want, man. Like that's the kind of level, like that good. It's almost scary, you know, like almost scary, but that level of smarts, those are the best that are self-taught. And these days, like you said, you know, just go to Khan Academy online or go to YouTube and just start from scratch. Just start learning how to do some sort of knowledge work. And if you can learn how to program, and anyone can, you know, it's just a way of thinking that you learn. It's just the language that you learn and teach yourself. You'd be amazed the opportunities that open up, but it does take self-motivation. But because you've been in the military, one thing you know is discipline. And if you just start doing it in a disciplined manner, no matter where you are, before you know it, you will actually be in demand. You will be a person that if you apply for a job, you don't have to be stocking shelves somewhere. You can actually be making six figures within 6 months of training yourself.
Yeah.
It's amazing the opportunities that are there that people don't talk about.
And then people are like, oh, well, maybe I'm not good at math or I don't want to do programming, but even like internet marketing is the same thing. Like it's marketing, so high demand.
Yeah, and look, I know some of the top internet marketers in the world, man, and they're not geniuses. It's actually funny. It's just like watching things and figuring things out. You know, there's a process to it. And you can learn all of this for free. You don't need to pay for anything. There's so much, there's great podcasts out there. Pick a pod, find the top internet marketing podcast, just start listening to it. Find YouTube videos, start doing, you know, and before you know it, you go to someone and say, look, you know, pay me, you know, $2,000 a month to manage your Facebook spend for you, and I will get you this kind of return. And then next thing you know, you got five clients, you're making 10 grand a month managing people's Facebook ad spend. It's so easy to do, but you got to be self-motivated. And you can teach yourself very easily. There's a lot of opportunity out there. And I really hope anyone listening to this who is actually thinking about what to do, like, man, if you're self-motivated, you're going to be sitting in gold.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the advantage of, you know, the guys that do transition and kind of figure it out, because they do have the discipline. They do really well. I wish it was more of them. In fact, the reason I decided to be kind of an ambassador and speak at Bunker Labs' first inaugural gala is because there was very few military nonprofits come along that are actually, you know, giving, you know, a hand up, not a handout. And I was super impressed with like what they're doing at Bunker Labs to kind of incubate, like bring these guys in, mentor them, make them feel like they're part of the family, men and women, and then give them this like peer, like support environment, but also like, hey, you got to do the work. Just seeing like a few of the companies come out of there that have had success, and it's pretty cool. And that, you know, that to me, that's much better than like, oh, you can't pay your bills, here's $500. You know what I mean? That's just bullshit.
You know, what most people don't realize in the history of Silicon Valley is you know, all the like Google, Facebook, all these major, major companies that, and a lot of them you never heard about, but they are massive, that are basically, you know, running the show or coming out of there. Silicon Valley was founded by military veterans. You know, in the semiconductor industry, people don't realize that. It was actually formed by military veterans. You know, I think there were a lot of, and back in the day, like 60s, 70s, like there's a strong history of just military people going into new technology and then just like running with it. Yeah, that doesn't get shared much online.
So I wanted to also ask you, like, what's your opinion on recently they've found all this information with that? The military has this crazy program, which I don't know why we waste our time and resources on it, but they bring in these foreign nationals and they train them, and then most of them don't meet the standards and they graduate them anyway. But we have this Saudi pilot in Pensacola who was obviously had this radical interpretation of Islam and shot and killed those people. And now, you know, the police are saying, trying to like shame Apple on TV into like releasing this guy's cell phone data. And I'm really conflicted with that, because I'd almost like, we know this, like, what are you going to accomplish by unlocking this guy's phone? Like, I just feel like we've lost a lot of our rights in the country. And look, I live my life like, hey, I have nothing to hide. My Google Home thing is on all the time to listen to me, you know, do whatever the hell I do. but which is crazy,
like,
but
grunting noises.
I'm more like when you really like look at when the Patriot Act was passed, like spying on US citizens without warrant, like that's when I really like struggle with, like, why are, like, because those powers can be abused, and they historically will always be abused.
So. Because power shifts in this country, you know, like who's here 4 years will not be here 4 years from now. Yep. You don't know what that person's agenda is. And these aren't all fully mentally sane people running the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you have an opinion on like,
the problem is it's a slippery slope. If you unlock it for one situation, then that could be used to be unlocking down to the point for like someone the local attorney general has it in for.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's not that this situation we should, you know, I would think, you'd want to know someone who's a terrorist. You want to know everything there, right? But that the slippery slope is it'll eventually come down to the local powers that be. You're abusing it.
I would rather live in a more dangerous world, but know that, you know, it's, you know, a freer.
And honestly, world. I don't think it's a more dangerous world, because first of all, there's very little online privacy, no matter what you do. But second of all, if you are interested in online privacy, there's enough ways that you can do it that even if they unlock their phone, right, the person could have been using an app like Signal.
Yeah.
And Signal, which deletes the messages, there's no way to recover them. You know, there's peer-to-peer stuff. So the people who want to hide stuff can hide stuff. right? If they want to hide stuff, they can. They really can. It's not that hard. It's actually quite easy. It's all available. It's apps on the App Store, right? And they work. Yeah. They're great for people who are in repressive governments, you know, but they also are used in democracies. So in that case, you use those laws, you start unlocking those people who are already, if they want to hide stuff, they'll hide stuff. But now those laws go to a slippery slope, and now you're doing for like people like you and I, if I've seen local attorney generals go for people, you know, because they're politically motivated, donation motivated, and it's just, you don't want to go down that slope, because that is the last frontier, is our whatever privacy we have left on our devices. You know, we live off these things.
No, I agree. I feel like we gave up so much just of our rights as citizens under that, the guise of safety and this Patriot Act. Is just crazy. The world is getting smaller and smaller with technology. It's like, I had some discussion with my friend about the whole like cryptocurrency thing. And I know you know crypto way better than I do, but there was this, we were talking about this French guy, young guy in my HBS class that was like, no, crypto's the future. We're going to transact. And it's this free economy. I'm like, dude, no government is ever going to allow that to happen, right? It's just not going to, you know, because they have the power to control it, and they are for sure going to control it. They're not going to lose their tax revenue. And if anything, it's going to get harder and harder to kind of move stuff around in the world and shelter, you know, shelter money from tax authorities. But anyway, I don't know if you have an opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, what crypto really works is in governments that are failing. Go to Venezuela, go to Argentina, you know, go to Iran, you know, those places. You know, how do you get money out? How do you get money away from the government? That's the only option they really have. Or just like buying precious metals. How many people can do that?
Yeah.
So crypto really works very well there. But as a whole, yeah. I mean, the U.S. is not going to allow. But they'll allow it to operate because it's a global thing. They can't stop it. That's the thing. It's a global distributed thing. You can't stop, but they'll allow it to operate in a way that they can actually watch who's doing what and collect their taxes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like almost like you start to think the government exists to collect taxes, not to do anything for you, but just to collect taxes.
Yeah.
You know, that seems to be their function.
Yeah. I mean, I was my friend Dennis, who owns a small bank in California. They were the first to accept crypto deposits, but they could only accept deposits that passed the know your customer test because the government wanted to collect taxes on it. And their deposits, they went from 800 million to almost 4 billion in 10 months. And he said, they had to refuse 90% of the people that wanted to deposit money because they couldn't pass the test. But it was crazy. Yeah. Anything else you want to, before we wrap, or you want to share with the audience about the book?
I've given this book my all. I really worked so hard on it to share something that's really worked for me, and now it's worked for so many people. I think if you're anyone who's got ever had any inkling of discipline in your life, you can apply this. It's a one man's journey, but it's also a human journey, and it is practical. And I'll tell you from my experience, it works. You know, I've had so many readers reach out to me, and people have nothing in common with, you know, 16-year-old girls to a woman in her 70s to, you know, obviously to just a wide range of just people. It's a human thing, you know, and yeah, it just involves, you know, kind of like us taking ownership of our mind, you know, and it's actually way easier to do than one thinks.
Yeah.
We just never taught it. And it's funny because I get like recovery centers using this book. I get psychologists emailing me using this book for their patients. You know, and I'm not a psychologist or anything like that. I'm just a guy who works on himself.
Yeah. Where can people find you? The best place?
I mean, Instagram, Twitter. My email address is in the book.
Well, what's the Instagram handle?
Just Kamal Ravikant. You know, okay. Wish you the best of luck spelling it.
Yeah, with a K. And I do want to tell people that are listening when they go search for the book, because it is. Make sure if you're searching for it on Amazon that you're getting the latest release copy.
Yeah, because it's really well worth. It's worth it. The older version was very small and held a lot back. And
I say that because, like we talked about, the original version is still available on Amazon, but it's
third party sellers.
Yeah, so make sure that you search for the updated version,
which is just like, it looks like a Banksy cover. It's got the full title on it and a guy with a spray can looking up at it as if he's painted it on the wall.
Yeah. And so for people, just make sure you see that 2020 release date on there. because it can be confusing. I know it was.
But bookstores will only carry the latest one.
Yeah. So everywhere books are sold and Amazon, go get the book.
And look, if you buy it at a local bookstore, you know, I love local bookstores because you're supporting a local business.
Yeah.
You know, if you're near one, I would say that's the best place to get it.
Are you doing any signings for the book? Any planned signings?
Nothing planned.
Okay. Maybe we'll rope you into one of our SoftRep author events. We're actually, it was one of our big 2020 initiatives to not only do more events for our members, but also, you know, we're basically leaning into the publishing world ourselves. We got 10 books we're publishing this year under the SoftRep imprint ourselves. We're just going to build out our own publishing division. So look for that. And then everyone listening too, we're speaking of events. We've got a partnership with iHeart Media. We're doing a big event in Austin, the Country Music Festival with iHeart. So it'll be some giveaways coming. So you guys make sure you look for the giveaway stuff on our social media and website. Not only are we going to give away special VIP packages to the Country Music Festival in Austin, but leading up to Veterans Day Music Festival in Nashville, that'll be a really cool event. We plan on having some giveaways, Gold Star Family giveaways, and as well as for our members. And it's pretty cool to see just how supportive iHeart has been with our partnership, and the fact that we're really committed to giving back to the military community and through our kind of charitable donations. Look for that. Go buy Kamal's book.
Thank you for getting it.
Yeah, I will. We got some more interesting guests lined up. I was telling Kamal last night, I had dinner with Conan. I was the guy to first walk across the Antarctica unassisted. Super interesting guy, Colin Brady. First across Antarctica solo, unassisted, human power only. It's fascinating. He was saying he's like calculating the fact that he can only bring so much food. He knew that he could eat 7,000 calories a day, but he was going to burn 10,000 and lose about a pound a day. So like calculating his like body mass loss.
Wow.
Because he said that's what got most people before him. Because a few have died trying to do the same thing he did, was they didn't calculate enough. They didn't get detailed enough to figure out how much food they had to take, and they'd run out of food and starve to death, basically. But fascinating guy. So I'm going to have Colin on the show and some other guests coming up, but appreciate you guys listening. Big Phil and I are tag teaming SoftRep Radio, so be sure to also email your questions, and if you have any ideas for upcoming guests, please email us at radio@softrep.com. It's radio@softrep.com, and we'll see you again next week out here.
You've been listening to SoftRep Radio. New episodes up every Wednesday and Friday. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter @SoftRep Radio.